What's happening, y'all? This is Todd Wilson. I would like to introduce you to our new segment called Parents Just Don't Understand. And our first guest of this new segment is a very special guest, one who has done it all. She's played, she is coached, and she has raised a pro herself, our future pro, however future you want to say it, right? Miss Lakita Gantz.
Thank you. I'm blessed to be on.
Thank you. I'm glad we made this happen. Yes, you have a new book, Raising a Pro.
Yeah.
All right. It's a guide for parents.
Yes.
That student athletes can read as well.
Yes.
Just about the numerous things that you're going to encounter on this road to trying to get your kid to be a pro.
Exactly. It's a difficult journey. But I thought as I've gone through this process, it was important for me to not only share my story, but give some, you know, good advice about the things that you have to encounter, because it can be, you could be up one day about with it and one day you can be down. So I think parents make the most sacrifices, whether they choose to or not. And I just thought it was important to write so that parents can have something to, I guess, not just hope for, but something that they can just have physically in their hand. They can say, okay, I need to ask these questions, or I need to, you know about this. So, yeah.
So it's a reference guide.
It is just a reference guide.
Whatever they are on their journey.
Exactly. So it can be from before you even have children to if your child is actually in college or beyond. I definitely think it's important for parents, coaches, and athletes to read it. I tell some hard truths. So whether it's on the parent side, the athlete side, or the coach's side, I definitely tell some truths in the book.
And that's awesome. I love the dynamic you're coming from with wearing every hat, right, in the situation. So you get a full view, a full perspective, being a player yourself, playing in the college level at Shaw University and Savannah State.
Yeah.
Just talk about a little bit about your upbringing into the basketball world. What was it like you developing to be able to play college ball?
So the first thing I can say is that my mother only came to one game. And so I think that is probably where just my passion for what student athletes want the most when it comes to playing their sports. They literally want someone there to watch them, right? So I'll say maybe this book started there. I actually went through the process of playing, practicing, meeting people to help me get better. I didn't actually play basketball until ninth grade.
Wow.
All right, so I played football as a little girl. I had six guy brothers. And just real quick, I tried out for a football team.
In high school?
I tried to try out, at least. He sat me on the side for the whole tryout, and I was so upset. But he ended up walking me up to the gym and introducing me to Coach Pope. He was the assistant, the JV head coach. He was like, you know, Coach Pope, this is Lakita. I think she'd be better off playing basketball instead of football. So that was where my journey started. And so I was always, you know, I was always athletic and I loved sports. I didn't know I wanted to play basketball, but I practiced whatever he taught me that week. I would go home and practice in my backyard or in somebody else's backyard because I didn't have a rim that had nets. So I would like knock on my neighbor's doors and ask, can I come? And every day for 4 years, I would just work. Always tried to like go to the outside courts. I think that's something that's not normal for, you know, players these days.
They don't mess up their shoes.
Exactly. So I was born into like getting up at 8 a.m. on a weekend and coming back home at 10 p.m. and I'm at the court the whole entire time. So that's where my love came. That's where my knowledge came from as far as playing with all guys and learning that I had to be able to do something well so that whenever I did get a chance to get on the court, I could be valued. And that's where shooting came in for me.
Nice. No, so where did that work ethic come from? You said you're so, and not saying that she didn't support. So my mom barely went to my games too, right?
Okay.
And so she would either, or if she did, she was working a snack bar. She was not watching basketball. And did that work ethic come from seeing your mom work and grind? Or where did that, like the wherewithal to know, like, yo, I got to go get this work in.
Mm-hmm. I think mostly, my mom was a housewife. But to me, that's like a really big job. She was there to cook. We had dinner every day, house clean. So I felt like I saw that work ethic in her. But I will say that my stepfather, he worked three jobs. all the time he just work. And I think as a whole, I saw both parts. I saw the domestic part, and then I saw the professional part of you have to do what you have to do to take care of your children.
Yes.
And I think my work ethic definitely came from having those two individuals in my life. And me being able to say, although it's like hard growing up and my parents go through their mess, I want to, you know, come out on top. So how do I do that? And so the work ethic definitely came from both of them, even though I really never thought of it like that until you just asked that question.
That's what I'm here for. No, that's awesome. I read in your introduction that you had dreams of being in the NBA.
Yes.
Like, you know, the love of basketball, and I'm the first girl in the NBA. And that's what you were striving for. And I think it's important to see, like, now we have a WNBA, which I'm sure that, you know, the ladies are looking forward to doing. But that desire to make it to the highest level, right, gives you a push as well. And you, being a female, being denied in one sport totally, like, no, you ain't playing football.
Yeah.
Go hoop. What did you have to prove with basketball?
I think it was just because I had six guy brothers. And by us playing all kind of sports, so whether it was football, two-hand touch, tackle on the grass, whether it was jumping from roof to roof, seeing who can go to the top of the tree, like, I
did
always
compete. Did anybody not make it? Like, did they fall off the roof? I gotta ask. You grew up in Detroit, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, we all made it.
Okay, good. No,
I would say maybe some people kind of almost didn't make it, and we had to pull them up.
Okay.
But it was always competitive. And even though I had the tomboy side, there was the girl side too. So the girls would be like, you can't double dutch. What? I can double dutch and dribble a bat. I mean, play football. What are you talking about? So I think our neighborhood gave us competitiveness because we had, you know, football games against each block. We would go to the, you know, park and play softball. This Hubble versus Lauder or Marlowe versus Hubble. So we had a lot of competitiveness in our neighborhoods, in our families that allow us to play like that as kids. And I think that's a beauty, the beauty and the gift of when we grew up. So I'm kind of always say I'm blessed to be born in the 70s because I got to see a lot, especially the athletes that have come and gone. And so I think the Bad Boys were definitely a part of my competitiveness that, because as soon as I started playing, my brother introduced me to the Bad Boys, my stepbrother. And then after that came the Fab Five. So I got the Bad Boys and the Fab Five all together.
Man.
And those were like super competitive people. So Isaiah Thomas is definitely in my top three all time. And I love Jalen Rose. So having those two different teams and being from Detroit and knowing that like our city is most of the cities across America with the number one murder capitals, it's like we have to find a way out.
Yeah.
I often talk about, as a culture, sports, unfortunately, is our number one thought process of the way out. But in raising a pro, I want parents to look at something else outside of the sports to get us out of that situation. So,
No, the sports is the vehicle, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And you can shift the focus on, hey, how you approach this, right?
Mm-hmm.
How you, like you said, you just worked hard to get to that level. That's what we're really trying to teach these kids
exactly.
at the end of the day.
Exactly.
So that's the information that you're giving in your book to how to connect all those pieces. So you have a brilliant person, not a brilliant basketball player
exactly.
at the end of this. So that's awesome that you're connecting that. College.
Mm-hmm.
And so you played at two different schools. College opportunities came up. What was that journey like in being able to play at the next level?
I will be honest and say, I don't think when I first started playing basketball in ninth grade, I was like, oh, I'm going to go to college and play. I was a senior in high school playing a game, and a referee, I call him Coach Merch now, but a referee asked me, you know, what was I doing after 12th grade? And I was just like, I don't know. And he was a junior college coach at the time. So I thought I was going to go play for him because he coached junior college, and it was another opportunity for me to continue my career. But he was such a good guy, and he wasn't a selfish coach. He knew, or he told me, like, you have something special. You're like, you're better than the average junior college kid. And he ended up connecting me with the coach at Shaw University in Raleigh, North Carolina. And he was like, I think you're good enough to go and play here. And most coaches would keep you for themselves.
Right, right.
But he was one one of the people in my life that showed me that he was about all kids and getting to the next successful level. And he introduced me to that coach. The coach came to see me play. And I won't lie, my life was hard growing up with my parents. And it was just like, okay, North Carolina, Detroit at Wayne State, Eastern Michigan, or JUCO. What's the farthest away from here?
Get away.
And so I chose, of course, the HBCU. And I did everything by myself. The paperwork, financial aid. All my mother had to do was sign papers, because I was definitely the one in the offices of school and my counselor. Like, okay, what do I have to do? What do we need to do? Okay, and I figured it out. And mom, you got to sign this. All right, cool. And that's pretty much how I chose Shaw University. And the day she brought me to the school, okay, we drove 13 hours and it's hot. You know, she's like crying in the whole registration line the entire time. And she's just like, I don't want you to be here. Because, of course, if for people who don't know, HBCUs are normally in a rough neighborhood.
Yeah.
And so my mom was like, I'm not leaving you here. And in my head, I was like, but I live in Detroit. Like, what's the difference?
Right.
And she got a phone call that kind of made her upset. And she was like, well, I got to go, when she was supposed to stay for 2 days. I was like, oh, cool. I'm not going anywhere. I'm staying here. And that was it. Like, I knew that I was mature enough to make it without anybody, because my mom, my stepdad was he's a disciplinarian. Rules were the thing. So I knew at 8 years old, watching my siblings, that I was going to be fine growing up, you know, and being able to go off to college. Like, so it wasn't a worry.
You were taking care of kids as a kid.
At 8 years old, I'm the oldest of five. My mother has four, and I pretty much watched them and took care of them. I remember being five watching a baby. So I know that what I do now in my life, my purpose, has been my purpose forever. I've known it for a long time, and I can remember back being 5 years old asking to babysit a baby. You know, like, mom, I want to watch the baby. And now that my life is full circle, it's like, oh, this is what it was for. It's always been to nurture young people. So.
Yeah. No, my daughter just turned five, so I can have her watching the baby.
That's
and
exactly.
All, I mean, I could. She's caring, but to actually be responsible for a baby for a moment is very, very crazy.
And you know that times are different now,
yes.
Of course. So I feel like at eight, me standing in the house watching my sister and brother by myself, you probably still have that. We just don't know about it
right, as much. Right,
because
you'll get called. Child services.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes. So it was different back then. You could be in the house watching kids.
We also did not have to wear seatbelts. So yeah, it was a total different talk.
Totally different. You didn't have camera phones. You barely had a two-way on your line. Can I get car waiting, or three-way? So yeah, it's different now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And so stepping into college, and it looks like you did this yourself. Like, you took the initiative mm-hmm. as a kid, and it's important because parents are way more involved in the sports, right?
Yes.
For many different reasons, right?
Yes.
And I'm sure you discussed that even in your book. It's like, what does that look like when a parent is wants it more than the kid? And it's having somebody, you took initiative.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I tell parents this all the time. Let your kid tell you they want to train.
That's
Stop
a fact.
Just sending them to training. Yes, you want to show them how to work hard. You want to show them what it takes to build their craft. And at a certain age, though,
mm-hmm.
if they're not in this as much as you are, you need to let it go and teach them how to play guitar or
mm-hmm.
paint or do some other extracurricular activity, because this game ain't for the weak. Sports in general are not for the weak.
Exactly.
And so, you know, you taking the initiative and then going on to college. Now, I'm sure you had to deal with the coach. This different style of authority, right? And
yes.
So what was your experience like?
That's funny you asked that question. So I went to Shaw University first. So that was freshman year through junior year. And I was a Prop 48. We don't use that word anymore. I was laughing today going through my notes. I don't even know if people know what Prop 48s are. But that's when you're ineligible and you have to sit out that first year because you didn't qualify. Big dog Glenn Robinson, he actually was a Prop 48 at Purdue. And I had to sit out. Because, of course, I didn't have a support system, so I didn't know all the things that I needed, test scores, all of that stuff to match. And so I sat out the first year. Fast forward, my coach, let me tell you something. My coach was very smart. But he would always say to me, if you work hard, you'll play. So in my head, if I work hard, then I should be playing. If she went 0 for 11 and I play her position and I work harder than her, then why aren't I playing, right? It was a struggle just dealing with knowing how hard I was working. I would go in the gym before practice. Then I would come back because we practice at 6, the boys practice at 8. I would come back after the boys and practice again. Like, I worked my tail off just to try to get on my basketball court, my first college. And I tore my ACL going into my sophomore year. And after I tore my ACL that spring, I thought, like, oh, my God, it's over. But I worked my butt off, and I was ready in 5.5 months. So I didn't even miss a year. I went right into that first – well, actually, it's junior year of college, but it's sophomore year of playing. And I literally was ready, still working harder than everybody else with an ACL.
You were fully recovered?
I was fully recovered. And it's funny because now I look at these players, and I'm like, y'all taking a year off. Like, what? A year? 5.5 months. For 5.5 months – I didn't do anything but work. And my first time running was in preseason, like before our preseason training. Wow. But I was ready to go. I don't know. Sometimes I feel like he had something against me, but then I don't know. I just don't know. He never kind of favored toward me. And in my book, I talk about most players always believe in the coach. No matter where they go. I don't care if it's college, high school. They always believe in the coach. But that's not necessarily true for a coach. He doesn't, or they don't always believe in the players.
Man.
And I think that's the struggle right now in a lot of this stuff. Because, you know, I could go all out as a player and I just want you to tell me the truth.
Yeah.
That's it. I just want you to tell me the truth. And I think that's even with parents. And I tell my friends who coach now, like, y'all have all these, you know, negatives towards parents. But if you tell parents the truth and you're straight up with them in the beginning and you give them boundaries, you won't have half the issues that you actually have. But you have to be honest and truthful to them. So but just to the point of college, my coach, I love him because even when he wasn't talking to me, I was listening. Mm. But that junior year, going into that junior year, we were 8-0. Black colleges have to take a break. They have to take 2 weeks off in between Christmas and the new year. We came back. It was conference play. We were 8-0. That first game back. So we 2 weeks now. We're doing two-a-days. I'm busting my tail. He played everybody. We played Winston-Salem State. I'll never forget. It's a road game. He played everybody on the team except me.
Ooh.
I was like... And I was really, really, really passionate back then. And I just was like, you know what? Before I do something crazy, I'm going to, like, let this roll. And that next day, I didn't go to practice on time. Actually, it was late. I missed the whole practice. I came and I had my bag packed. And I opened up the door. And I said, I just want to put this on your desk. And I just need you to know that I'm going to quit this team. Because if I don't quit this team, I'm going to kill you. And
oh, man.
You should have saw like the face that he was just looking at me like, I can't believe it. But for me, I always say my son is a way better person than me because I just couldn't take it anymore.
Yeah.
For 3 years, you know, I had put in a lot of work and I just thought that before I do something stupid, just let me let it go.
Yeah.
And so I literally walked away, let it go. And I was 25 hours away from graduating and thought I was done with basketball. Mm-hmm. I thought, you know what? I'm graduating, get my degree, and I'm going to keep it moving. And a coach saw me in the stands about a week or so later. He worked at Shaw.
So you were still watching the game?
I was still going to the... Yes.
I do have a question because I think it was important that you touched on, like, the coach's job to be transparent and honest with the families.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something that the families can do to get that transparency from a coach? Because coaches ain't going to do it. They're used car salesmen, right? They're
yes.
going to do whatever they can to get you there right now. Like,
yes.
Because they have a job to hold and they want to see how everything shakes out. How do the parents get that transparent moment from the coach? What can they ask beforehand?
So I think it also comes from a point of, as a parent, you being transparent yourself and understanding like the reality of what's going on with your student athlete. I can sit here and say, oh yeah, my son is an NBA player, he gonna be a pro. But then if I feed that and then the things that need to happen don't match up to that, or he's not playing a lot, so my biggest thing is the proof has to kind of go with what you expect. And we have to have some reality. So for example, we're gonna use basketball since that's what my son plays. Your son's 5'5" and you want your son to go to the NBA. So to me, you have to have an understanding of, let's go with the average height in the NBA right now of just point guards, and then start to design. If you're going to make it, you got to be special at 5'5".
Right.
Let's be clear.
It's only been, what, three people maybe?
I think Muggsy, Spud, 5'5". And then...
Right, Spud was like 5'7".
Yeah, Spud was like 5'7". So I don't even... I'm just using 5'5 as a... But just understanding as a parent the reality of what your student athlete actually has the opportunity to do. And that's not to say he or she can't. But you do have to have some type of boundary set that, hey... It can go this way, but you got to be really, really great at all these things. And again, I also think that people forget that it has to match up with opportunity, who you know, where you are.
It's so much
that goes into it. And I think for me, that's the educational part that I would like parents to have. It's so many things. I can have the perfect specimen of a pro athlete, but he could be at the wrong place at the wrong time and miss his opportunity.
Yeah.
And so I do put numbers in there about, you know, how many people actually make it, what the percentages are, because I don't think that's talked about enough. So I just feel like parents should definitely research where you're trying to go.
Yes.
And understand where does your athlete fit in that. That's the start of it. And then I talk about building a village of trusted people that have been where you're trying to go.
Yes.
I definitely think that's important. The people... I never let the only people that coach my son that, and I'm not being, and I say in the book, I'm not being arrogant, but I only allow people to coach him that had been where he was trying to go. And his middle school coaches or elementary coaches, I had no control over those though, right? So that's fine too. But even then, I talk about respecting whoever is coaching your kid, because you don't have control, full total control. But if you can navigate it, especially going from middle school to high school,
yeah,
like it's important to know, okay, where am I sending my child? What does it look like for possible playing time? What does it look like? You know, and then going in there, talking to coaches and asking questions that some people just won't ask. I remember I asked the coach, how many of your black athletes do you maintain a relationship with now that they're out of your program? You know, having the, you know, audacity to ask questions that will then help you see if this is the right fit for you or your child. And then I always talk about athletes talking to other athletes who've played for coaches or who've gone to these schools.
Yes.
You know, that's important. So I can even say, like, me and my fiance, we talk about this. As much as I know, right, as much as I have experience in, there were certain questions that I missed when I said, okay, Rob, you want to go to UMass? You know, when I knew that was on the table, like he really felt like that was it. There were questions that I missed to ask before he said, I commit.
Right.
But I know that now, right? So I'm going to have to, you know, redo the book.
Second edition,
you know, because there were questions that I actually missed. And I'm not ashamed to say that. And I'm also... not ashamed to say to my son, like, hey, what are we going to do? What are we going to do about it? You know, he has had some adversity so far, but my goal is to try to navigate and help him through it. Not necessarily. And then believe me, he is a better person than I probably would have been.
Not as passionate as you were.
You know what I'm saying? Yes. And he tells me now, like, Ma, listen, I got it. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And I get goosebumps hearing him tell me how he should do it and what he should go through and how he needs to be better at this and better at that. And no matter what and where he goes.
And some self-awareness.
Man, it's I'd be like, dang, I did that?
Yeah.
I made this little boy, you know? But to me, that's raising a pro.
Yeah.
And you teach him all this stuff, And then when you get halfway, like I would say we're like close. And when I think about pro, I want my son to make it to the NBA because that's his ultimate dream or goal. But for me, I feel like I've raised the pro already. He's 19 years old. He can speak in front of people. He can navigate a room. He cares about people. A number one thing I've always taught him is to be a servant to others. And that's probably the most important thing I could ever, you know, imagine for my son than anything. Take care of other people.
You know? And he got to college by taking care of other people. Mm-hmm. I think parents need to hear that, right? Because it's a self-serving world we live in. And my son needs to do this. You need to get buckets. You need to do that.
And he has a shirt. It's called, we had a t-shirt company where we did like messages on t-shirts. And it was called Unguardable. And his message was, I'd rather win, not score. And even when he created that shirt, I was just like, this guy gets it. Yeah. And most people don't. And I get it. You know, volume scores are what people look at because you can't fight the reality, right? Let's talk about, we talk about basketball. People love athletes, yep. Power fives, big schools.
Yep.
But people also love athletes who are smart, have high IQs, know how to make the right plays. And we have to understand the difference in that as parents.
Yeah.
So he knew, Rob knew. He was just like, Mom, I know I'm not a power five kid. I probably could be with the right situation and somebody to believe in me, but at this point, I have 15 offers and only one of them is a power five. And so we did the math.
Man, I love it. I love how transparent and real you've been with his situation, right? So for him to understand it at that level, right? And you're not pushing him to be somebody yet. He's like he said, impossible. But hey, what's likely is here, mm-hmm. and is standing on that. The other part, keep speaking to it, that there is an archetype for college players and NBA players.
Yes.
You have to fit that. There's only less than 1% of the world can score at a high level like the NBA players all these kids are trying to be.
Exactly.
There's more role players in the NBA than there are superstars.
Exactly.
And then in college, it's the same thing. There's only two, maybe three kids that average double digits on every team.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone else fits their role and then plays into that role.
Exactly.
And that's what, when you want to be a pro, that's what the pro teams are looking for, whether it's overseas or the NBA. Do you fit this role that I'm trying to give you? The superstars are the superstars. If you have a superstar in your hands, you'll know it.
Exactly.
You'll know it pretty clear, right?
Mm-hmm.
You do have people who develop into a superstar status, but they even take longer. You look at someone like Jalen Brunson, who was like, oh, he can play. He's at Villanova. He's a good guard. He's good. Finally on an all-star team. But he's, what, 8 years into the league?
Exactly.
It took him a while to even get to that point. And, you know, you hope someone like him gets better, continues to improve, but this is probably where he's going to be peaking, which is awesome. He's an NBA All-Star. He got that on his resume now because he took his time to develop the right way and play basketball.
And I like that part. And if I could like share that with parents, understanding that this process is a process and it takes time. And again, I have to remind myself as a parent, I open my book more than you think, even now that I'm on this journey with my son in college. But the process is patience. And I think about, okay, he's a freshman. Just think and imagine what he will be as a senior in college. Because so many people are caught up in the one and dones or 2 years. And we have, I always tell high school students, like if they say they're a sophomore, I'm like, you have literally 2 years and a half to get where you're trying to go as far as college. As right now, he's a freshman. He has 3 years. So that's 365 times three that you need to work and work to get where you're going. And even then you should progress, you know, and I don't think everybody wants to right now.
Yep.
Everybody wants everything right now. And I'm not knocking people who have it, but those are the ones, right? Those are the superstars. You know it. They, but some people need to go through that process. And I think when I think about Jalen Brunson, I love the Villanova process that his coach had, the process for all of them, you know, knowing that they have a system in place and they're going to 2 foot jump and, you know, like I love that part of knowing that players can develop. And a lot of times not sending your child to a person who can develop is what actually hinders your child. Okay? So that's the part that is really something I can probably like, just, I talk about that in the book too, like knowing who you're giving your children to develop what you want them to have. Skipping the processes actually holds you back more than it would actually push you forward. Yes. And a lot of people have to skip the process. So, yeah.
No, that's amazing. When did you see that your son was a Division I level player?
When I was coaching at a Division I school. Like, so I was the director of operations for men's basketball at Eastern Michigan from 2016 to 19. And there, so he would shoot in the gym, in the main gym. And I'll never forget, Coach Murph came and he was just like, you know, he can really shoot the ball. Now, I was a shooter, so I mean, that part was like obvious, but he's like, he can really shoot the ball. And one thing for sure, if he gets taller, he will be able to play college basketball because college needs shooters. You always need a shooter. And so at that point, I think I knew he could play. I knew he was smart. I knew he was, you know, he was small though, because that was seventh grade. Literally going into 10th grade, he grew 8 inches in 10 months. So he started out at like...
How much money did you spend? Like new clothes, new shoes?
But you know, he grew, it was so fast.
That's crazy.
And of course, we had sweats, so we just, you know, wore sweats every day. But he grew fast. And then it was at that point, though, that I'm like, okay, he has a really high IQ, really good skill set. He could possibly do this. So in 2018, my second year with Eastern, I was going to quit because he was going into freshman year high school. And so Coach Murph was like, if you don't find nobody to replace you by this date, you got to stay. So he ended up playing JV though, Rob did. So I was like, okay, I'll stay another year. And I missed 5 games. I was crying all the time. I was like, oh no, I can't do this, because I know next year he'll be on varsity. And it was then. I think it was really when I saw the skill set, and then I saw the body type, the prototypical body that you need as a wing. And I knew he was dedicated. That was really it. So, you know, that question you kind of talked about, like, when does a parent know that the athlete is ready? My friends tried to get me to have Rod play AAU ball at 5 years old. And I went in that practice and was like, y'all got me messed up. I am not about to be running around here for these kids. They over there playing 12 little league. They doing the play. They over there on the floor. Like, nah, this is not going to work. So and that was 5. But at 8 years old, we put a rim in the backyard. And he would get up every morning and go and run laps around the block. And then he would go get his friends, and they would come back in the back, and they would practice before they actually played. Mm. That's when he showed me that he was ready. Like, he would get up on his own.
He was 8 years old?
He was 8 years old. I think, I feel like he was around basketball, too. Another thing. I tell people, whatever you want your children to do, put them around other children who do it. And they will probably end up doing that. It could be violin. It could be soccer. It could be cooking. Right. If you put them around other children that do it, they will end up doing it, probably, most likely. For me, I was already coaching. I was coaching. I played all the time. So he was in a gym consistently. I started teaching him at 4. And I'll never forget, we was working on the jab step, and people tease him all the time, like, you still working on that jab step? And he was slow, and I could see it, though. I could see in his movements that he could possibly, you know, take on the persona of his mother, and his father played, too. So, he 8 years old, we started working. And then when I knew in the summer times, and his training started at 8 in the morning, and he was getting up at 7, like, Mom, I'm ready. Like, I knew, like, he wants this a lot, so let's go after it.
Yeah, the structure and discipline.
Exactly. And I mean, I was really big on, like, schedules for him. Even if you go through my phone right now, you'll probably see every schedule he had every year from the time he was probably 10, 11, 12.
You had a blueprint.
Exactly.
You had the plan.
Exactly.
That's the big thing I talk to parents about. There has to be a plan behind it. You have all the resources, best trainers in the world. there's no actual plan behind where you're going and what you're doing with it and when he's going to develop what part of their game. All of that stuff matters. When you're going to communicate with college coaches, when's the right time to hit the social media and grow that?
Yes.
When's the right time to make the contacts that you need and those?
It's all definitely a plan. And I actually speak on that in the book. I talk about writing down the things that you want, how you're going to get there, what do you need to navigate it. Rob would call me if he wasn't home, like, Mom, what's the schedule? Send me the schedule. Even now, to this day, he's like, send me the schedule. But you said something about social media. He was going into, I think, sophomore year, and he would, like, put all this stuff on social media and then erase it. Put it up, erase it. It was a thing, I guess. I don't know. And one day we were going up to visit Ohio. And I told him, I said, listen, if you want to be recruited, you need to also understand that you are a market. You need to be marketable. And you need to figure out what you want to do with your social media. And you don't have to erase stuff and take it down. I said, so you need to either post something, say something positive, put a quote up. But you need to be active so people know who you are. And I said that to him, and he is, like, the most savviest guy. Not like, it was crazy how it went from the basketball stuff to fashion and him, you know, opening up his mind to so many different things. And now if you look at his social media, you're like, this kid, this a kid? Like, he's doing all these things, but he listened to me. And that's, and I mean, let me give credit to him right now. The biggest thing that happened for us is that he listened to me. He listened. But he also knew I was going to be honest and he could trust me. And I listened to him. I listened to him all the time. And even though I may not agree with it, the goal is to navigate, like, how am I going to do this with him rather than to him or for him? And so that's kind of what my profession is, restorative practices. And I've been like that my whole life with people. But it's better to do things with people than for or to them.
Yep.
So.
Yep. No, absolutely. That's so important to see the parent level, especially when they get in that teenage stage. To, I'm teaching you how to be. Now, after that, you become a coach.
Mm-hmm.
You become a coach. You become a mentor to your kid during those teenagers because they're not really trying to listen to you. You already taught them everything. Now it's, hey, I have a life situation. How do I deal with it?
Mm-hmm.
And you're supposed to guide them through that. Let them bump their head. Let them make mistakes. Let them face adversity.
Yeah.
So they know what it feels like. And so next time it happens and maybe you're not around, they know how to handle it. But when they're under your guidance during those between, I say, 11 and 15, 16, man, let them bump their heads.
Yes.
Ain't no college coaches looking at you. Let them bump their heads.
That's a good point, too, for parents to know, too. Like, you know, people don't really realize, like, EYBL is different from 16U, 15U, 14U. You know, it's a difference. And then thinking about, we argue, right? So here's, like, where we stopped arguing. Because I would push him. He would push and fight against. But there was one day where I was bawling, crying my eyes out. Like, why is it this? Like, what's the problem? One day he wants it. Then the next day he feels like he doesn't. That's those years, right? 11 to 15. And I called my friend whose father pushed him in that way. And I just asked him, you know, what did you want from your father at that time? If you could just, like, do it all over again. And he was just like, let it go. Let him go. Just let him be. He'll figure it out and he'll come and he'll tell you. And I haven't had an argument with him since. Like, we haven't gotten to that point of frustration since that day. And I just told my friend that about her son. Like, I was just like, it's cool. Just let him be.
Release them to the game.
Release it, and then they come back, and it's just a beautiful relationship when you can hear your children, understand where your children are coming from, and all the time we're not going to agree, and we're going to have our disciplinary and things we want to, you know, give them or teach them, but the relationship is the most important part. I actually posted yesterday something about just, I never wanted to lose my son due to fear or due to the fact that he felt like I wasn't listening to him. Mm. I always wanted us to be on solid ground. And so sometimes that takes us as parents being humble and just like letting it go. Just letting it go.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me ask you this. So leading up to this point, right? So we got to you starting or going to college, not playing, right? And then you got another opportunity in college.
Yes.
And I'm assuming you got to play.
Yes. So it's funny because it was like the total opposite. At Savannah State, I walked into Savannah. I walked on Savannah State's campus as like a superstar and hadn't played a game. It was like the girl from Detroit coming. And it was like crazy. First week, my coach got fired.
Oh, man.
My coach got fired. But let me say this. He got fired, but he shouldn't have been. He was really helping us. A lot of us had moved, came early, and our apartment wasn't ready. Mm-hmm. He literally left the house and let us just stay at his house.
And he wasn't there.
And he wasn't there. Somebody said something, they fired him. The blessing comes because the interim coach, she was 25. First of all, Dr. Tamika Smith-Jones, this is my mentor. She was 25. I was 23, maybe. We were only 2 years apart. And she became our interim head coach. She was the grad assistant, right? She was the hardest coach I ever played for. So she was a Delta. And she kind of, like, put in those values and those, like, those, what do you call it? Whatever they do to get to whatever they, like, I'm not.
Their intake.
Yeah, process. Like, right? Yes. So she kind of did that with us. No matter where we went, we had to be in twos together. Like, if you got caught by yourself, you had to run. We had curfews. We had to make up songs together. It was the weirdest stuff that I ever had experienced in my life.
Y'all was fledging on the basketball court. Oh, man.
It was crazy.
I love it.
But she built a team.
Yeah.
We won more games that year with her than they had won in 3 years, the previous three years put together. And she taught me so much just about being a lady. Her thing was always, no matter what you do, you be a lady. And I live by that now. My fiance talks about it all the time. Like, you need to be a lady. But she taught me, like, you can be angry. You can be passionate. You can, no matter what, when you act, though, you need to act like a lady at all times. So she was really good for us. They didn't end up letting her keep the job, though, because they said she was too young.
Right.
But for me, I was an athlete.
She was your coach the whole year.
She's the whole year.
And didn't let her stay after winning.
After winning, they did not let her stay. But, you know, it was HBCU.
Right.
So she ends up finishing grad school. And, of course, I'm like a little advocate. I got protests going. So because I protested and kind of fought for my coach, the next coach did not like me. And it's cool because it's like so many lessons in this. She ends up making me, she basically said, like, if you don't play defense, you ain't playing. And that opened my eyes to, like, I guess for me, I think where I am as a coach,
yeah.
It became like, okay, defense it matters. It matters a lot. And for me, just saying, you know what, I'm going to go out here. I'm going to work my tail off. I'm going to play D so I can get back in this starting lineup. It just taught me the importance of defense. So even though she did it as a punishment, it was better for me in the long run.
Right.
So, yeah, I finished at Savannah State. I did really good. But the first year with Coach Tam, in the middle of the season, I'm averaging like 12, 13 points a game. I tore my ACL again.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Same one.
But this time, like, somebody hit me in the knee. It wasn't like she hit me in my knee. Either way, did what I had to do, recover. I was playing my senior year. So
5.5 months again.
It was 6 months this time.
Two more weeks.
But what I learned was about water recovery my second time. Mm. Water recovery is something that is, I think people don't even understand how great it is for recovery from injuries. So 6 months, great. We have in Savannah, Georgia, there's an Olympic training gym there where all the Olympians come. And so every day we were just in the gym doing all type of stuff and getting ourselves and our bodies ready. I was probably in the most shape of my life my senior year of college. I was benching 125 back then. It was crazy. But no, so that's what happened. But, you know, I finished at Savannah State. Happy. I learned so much. I was blessed to have Coach Tam come into my life. Like I said, she's a mentor for me now. She's actually the chief of staff at Kennesaw State. Right now, and she was tough, but I always remember her lessons. Like, no matter what, I remember the lessons, and I remember, you know, to act like a lady at all times, but also handle your business. And for me, that's the pro that she kind of created in us, understanding how to be a professional. Yeah.
No, but it seems like regardless of the coach liked you or you liked them, you did learn something. You took you took the diamonds. You know, you didn't just fully disregard them because of whatever dislike you had towards one another.
And that's, if I could teach or say like anything to that, I think that's important as an athlete, a person, anybody who wants to cultivate success in your life. You need to know that, yeah, you may not like the person, or you may not like the way someone is giving it to you. But if it's jewels that can help you, you have to be able to, you know, take it as well. Because everything isn't going to go your way, especially when you have to work with other people. Right. It just doesn't, you know, go that way. I mean, I worked at Eastern Michigan where people would literally walk right by you and you said hello. But I would make sure they know I said hello so that they can now adjust to what's right. You know, we work in the same place. Let's say hello. Like, you know, let's be cordial. I'm big on culture. Yeah. I'm big on just having that, the relationships that you can have if you actually like speak up, you know. So I'm big on that. Yeah.
And so how did you transition from coach to coaching?
So my first, I graduated college 2000. I was going to move to Atlanta where Coach Tam actually lived. But I went home to get a car. 2 weeks turned into the summer. The summer turned into, hey, I might as well stay. A guy kept asking me, do I want to teach and coach? And I'm like, no, I don't want to teach. I don't want to coach. Why are you asking me this? And it was actually a coach at my alma mater, which I went to Cooley High School in Detroit. And
like the movie Cooley High?
So that Cooley High is actually in Chicago.
Oh, that's right.
But it's our school that they're talking about. So I don't know. It's crazy.
Oh, that's confusing.
Yeah, it is. Very confusing. So Cooley High. And the coach just kept asking me. So one day I was just like, you know what? I'm going to go down to the interview, right? The school was at a juvenile, right? I go in and I meet the principal. And she is adorable. She's an old lady, Miss Carolyn. And she's like, I think you can do this work. I know you can do this work. She took me into some classrooms. And now, mind you, juvenile is, these students are in jail.
Right, right.
Some of them might go home. Some of them might not. The girls are all in one class. The boys are all in one class. So you could teach in between, right? At the time, I really didn't know what I was getting myself into. I'm just like, all right, it's a job. You're going to make, you know, $30,000 a year. Cool. Like, that's good coming out of college. I was trying to make that in Atlanta and I'm home. I also wanted to make this, my little brother was 10. And so I'm the oldest. Then there's my sister, my brother, and then my baby brother. When I left to go to college, he was 4. I raised him from the time he was born until he was 4, and I left to go to college. At this time, he's 10. My mom, I didn't feel like they did a great job of paying him attention, being the baby. So I had a responsibility that I felt I should stay home for my brother. Mm-hmm. So I literally stayed home, took him from my mother, and he was actually my first child, if you really be, like, to be honest. I got a 2-bedroom apartment and moved my brother in with me. And from 10 to 14, 15, he was just like skyrocketing. Like, it was awesome. So that was my first child that I actually had before I actually had my own.
Wow. And so having all this responsibility again, you've been doing it for, like you said, your purpose was given to you at a very young age, and then taking on a responsibility you didn't know what was about working at a juvenile center, which I'm sure you got many stories about.
Right.
And then also becoming a mother to your brother at the time. So what developed in you during this time that, you know, you can relate back to raising a pro?
I'll tell you exactly. So, y'all, I know everyone's seen He Got Game. So my brother wanted to play basketball. And this is where I learned I learned what not to do with my son. So, my little brother at 10, by 12 years old, he was playing basketball. We were on the AU circuit and everything. 2 years. It only took me 2 years to teach him. The problem is how I was teaching him. Yelling, screaming, like making him do it. He was crying. It was definitely He Got Game. I'm not even, I promise you it was He Got Game. And so fast forward, my brother ended up being diagnosed as a depression or schizophrenic. Mm-hmm. After he actually moved back with my mom when he was about 16. But I remember just like those interactions. And so when I had my own son, which of course now is what, four, almost 8 years, 9 years later, when I see the whole bigger picture, it was just like, okay, I can't do that.
Right.
And so I had a pre-trial before actually having my son. So I didn't tell everybody that. I had a precursor, okay, before, so that I knew what not to do.
Right.
But even to this day, my little brother, he still loves basketball. I feel like if it weren't for his diagnosis, then things could probably have even been different. I mean, even now he'll text me like, little brother, I saw a little nephew, my nephew, you know. So he watches his nephew, and my son loves his uncle. Like he dreams about making it to the NBA to take care of my brother, you know, because he knows that there's some things that he needs medically that if he had more money, we could actually do. Yep. So he thinks about that all the time.
That's a good chip on the shoulder, right? Yeah. To help and to take care of somebody in your family. And we talk about those things. And like you said, the pro that you develop isn't a basketball pro.
Right.
A pro in life. And so I'm sure wherever, you know, this takes him, he'll still be able to provide those things.
Exactly.
That's just why it's not about what the game itself, but what the game can do for the people around you as well.
Exactly.
And that's the big picture, is that you're developing a person that is bigger than the sport.
Yes.
Who they are as a person, their character, and their the things that they desire are for a bigger purpose than, you know, being, you know, which is fine too, to being on the, I'm saying, the cover of Sports Illustrated or something, but you know, being a popular player in the game,
exactly.
But for actually impacting people with what you can do.
Exactly.
What you built. And so.
Yeah.
I'm picking this book up for the first time. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What's the first chapter you're telling me to read? I can only read one chapter.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay.
You can only read one chapter. I would say,
we have 16 chapters in this book.
Mm-hmm. It probably will be the first chapter, though, as a parent, because the first chapter talks about building confidence and faith in your child. Without confidence and faith, you can't believe you can do any of this anyway. You know? So I think that as I think about parents and, you know, you have a newborn child and nobody's the perfect parent. We all have our ways of doing it. And nobody's right or wrong. But for me, I think that you want to instill confidence in your kid and you want them to have faith to believe in something they can't see. So no matter what it is, they need that in order to do anything in life. You know, whether it's riding a bike, right? You need faith to think you can ride on those two wheels.
I'm teaching my daughter right now. It's so crazy.
Isn't it?
You know, take her out every day. We just do 10 minutes of the balance bike, right?
Exactly.
Trying to build her up. And so she's finally starting to do it for her. And to that, once they realize they have that confidence,
exactly,
their response to it,
exactly,
is what, man, that's the joy that you can only feel as a parent.
You know how those one things where you're like, oh my God, everything they do, like, oh, they did this, I try to make him feel like that every day. He's 19 years old, and I still try to make him feel like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of it. So that first chapter is definitely the first chapter for a reason. I could have started with academics.
Right.
But I chose to put that in the back.
Yeah.
But I started with what you actually need to start building any pro.
Right.
And that's the confidence and faith. So.
100%. And I think it's an important one to talk about because of the state of basketball, right? We just had All-Star Weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about the development side and, you know, how kids in America are playing too many games. And I want to talk when it gets to high school, right? Because we have a bunch of prep schools now. We got the NIBC, which is a bunch of prep schools, essentially, in this league. And then, it's the EYBL Scholastic League now.
Okay.
We changed the name, right? And then we have a bunch of prep schools, right?
Okay.
So your son went to a prep school.
He did.
Where did that decision come from and how did that get him to where he's at now?
So I can say this, you know, some people reclass their student athletes. I always felt like he was going to be ready. So I never did the reclass thing. It was just something in my head that said, listen, I feel like even though I play Division II basketball, I pretty much practiced and worked like a Division I athlete. So I feel like, okay, I'm doing this over with him. If he does it, what he should do or needs to do, and he's living by what I'm teaching, we're going to be ready. Then COVID hit. So when COVID hit, he was going into his junior year. And that scared the S out of me. Like, it scared me so bad that I was just like, okay, now what? Like, will he have the opportunities that he normally would have had? Because now it's just crazy. We didn't know what to expect from COVID. And I won't lie. There was a season after that first season after COVID. We had 16 games. And I'll never forget his coach. And this is, let me say, I appreciate you, Coach Terrence Porter, for everything that he did for my son, like far as like X's and O's and stuff. He was really, really good at that. And he was really, really good at helping my son be really good at what he can do. He put stuff in place for him to be good at what he can do. And so I think like that year of COVID showed me like how good my son could possibly be. And that last game though, we lost in the playoffs to a team that we led the whole game. Right, we led the whole game and ended up losing in the last possession of that game, right? I had already been thinking about it, but it was just like, you know what? We're going to prep school. So I was so upset that I'm like, we're going to prep school. And I had made up my mind that that's what we wanted to do. However, Big Rob, he did not want him to leave. Going into June, like senior year. So he would have did senior year and a post-grad year. Mm-hmm. My thought process was, let's go somewhere for 2 years, develop, work on this, get exposure. He didn't like that. He didn't want that to happen. He wanted him to stay home. And so we kind of really like moved all the way to Baltimore sort of. And he told us we had to come back because we had joint custody. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's cool. I'm like, all right, so how am I going to make this happen? Like what? So I'm going to stay in Baltimore. You go home. I'll be there for the games. And we've been like a nomad family for a long time. But he went back for senior year while playing for Team Melo. I stayed in Baltimore so that we can maintain like the EYBL. Residency. Yep. Yes. And so then he finished the season. And he had a great senior year. So I can say, although we did end up still going to prep school, senior year was amazing for him. And I'm really proud because he made everything. He led a team to, he actually went to Hamtramck High School, which is Rudy Tomjanovich's high school.
Okay.
And he actually won their first district title since 1984. Like, he did some really amazing things. We actually became a part of a community that loves him. And he goes back and forth and does stuff for the community there. So that was a great thing. But prep school, I still was like, you know what? He's only 17. Let's continue that process. Let's go to prep school. And I will say December, January, because he went to SCA. Julius called for him in October. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, you know, his dad is not buying it. And so we went to visit Julius, and we went to a game in Ohio and then came to California the next week. And I enjoyed the way that Julius was pushing his kids. And I enjoyed that fact that Julius knew exactly what he was as far as his talents and his potential. That drew me like really to Julius. And something happened while we were there because he practiced, he played, and something happened where Rob was playing a kid one-on-one and he could have beat the kid, but he chose to shoot a jump shot, and Julius like went at him like, you could have won the game. And Rob turned back and said, don't worry, I got this. And it was just like this crazy dynamic between a coach and my son. And then Rob did exactly what he told Julius he was going to do and how he was going to beat the kid. It was crazy. And I was like, yeah, this is the place for you. Like, this is it. So we did that mostly too because he was 17. Rob is a young, he's younger. He was 17 mm-hmm. when he graduated.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know, it'll help you. I was going to move to California because, of course, I was a helicopter mom. But then I met a friend and he was just like, you should just let that boy go by himself. And that was, to me, God sending somebody I didn't even know who came into my life to show me that. send your son by himself. He's going to figure it out. And he did. I mean, he would call and say, Mom, he would say, I'm the captain. I'm the tutor. I clean up the house. I'm the mentor. He was like always telling me all these responsibilities he had. He lived with seven guys. It was amazing. And they lived better than we lived. They lived in these wonderful houses. And I'm like, he by himself, he's doing it. Then I found out he was driving every day in California. Like, I'm like, okay, cool. Now I can trust him because he's been driving to California. If you can drive in California, you can drive anywhere.
Yes, thank you. Listen, these people though, I need them to get out of the left lane if I'm going faster than you. Move over. That's disrespectful, but go ahead. Sorry, I digress. Yeah.
So prep school was really an option just because of COVID. I won't lie. We committed 2 weeks before he even came to SEA.
Right.
And I would never knock the decision, but I would definitely ask other questions if I could do it all over again.
Yeah.
Coming full circle where we are now, I'm so proud of my son for knowing what he wanted because he knew that. He told me, and I was just like, you sure? Okay. And then recruiting became so overwhelming. By this time, he's getting calls like every other day. I'm on a Zoom call every other day. And I'm just like, look, man, if you already know where you're going,
right,
let's just go ahead and get this out of the way.
Right.
So the beauty of it was he had already chosen a place, and he was able to focus on just playing basketball again. And I think that was good because he made third team, all American, whatever, for JUCO. I mean, I'm sorry, for prep school third team. And I was just like, you know, you did a lot of good things, but always know. And a coach at Rob Lanier told my son this. He said, this will be the hardest thing you've ever done in your life, college basketball. Mm-hmm. And so I remind him of that now because it is.
Yeah.
It's for anybody, everybody.
Full-time job.
You're starting over. You're really starting from scratch as a freshman going to college. For real, for real. If you're not one of those superstars, right?
Yeah.
You have to learn the process again, learn what your coach wants. Because one thing about college is a system. It's not about your individual talents. It's about you fitting into somebody's system.
Yeah.
I don't know why it's different because Coach Frank Martin came and spoke at our forum. And he said, high school basketball is more like the NBA. He said, but college is totally different. But what I don't understand as a mom or a person, just look from the outside looking in, is why isn't college more like the NBA if that's where we're trying to get these players?
Aren't you
from?
Developing them the same way? Control. It's yes. Love control and their jobs and what they know, winning. Oh, no, I talk to people. Listen, if the college coaches allow the kids to display the level of talent that they
mm-hmm.
have today,
mm-hmm.
college games would be a lot more fun and they'd make a lot more money
yeah.
than they do because I think there's a healthy balance in college where you do have a coach who has X's and O's and have great basketball minds,
mm-hmm.
but matched up with that talent and skill, you'll get a better version of the NBA where, you know, people decide, you saw the All-Star game, they decide when they want to play hard or when
exactly.
they want to do something. They're so talented, like most, or I'm going to say, you know, the superstars can do what they want on the floor. And,
when
and,
they want to.
Right.
Scoring 211 points,
why, no defense. Like, somebody scoring 100 on me, I'm mad. 200, it's crazy. But that is where, I think that's what Adam Silver is talking about.
Okay.
Is, hey, we got to get on the same page about how we're developing these athletes so we could stay the best in the world. Because
mm-hmm.
But people
do you
saw
think
that.
The development is actually has been shaded because of the one and done?
No,
when I say that.
The one and done is the one and done. They're gone.
But people don't understand that because every kid always trying to be a one and done. So let's talk about the kids who leave early
mm-hmm.
and they averaging 7 points and 7 rebounds.
It depends on how tall they are. So
that's a fact.
So,
okay.
No, so I think what needs to be explained more and more, and literally this is why we have Elevate Your Game podcast, where we have the experts in the industry telling you the truth.
Mm-hmm.
This is why we have this new segment, right?
Right.
Where they're seeing the truth that there's an archetype in the NBA. If there's somebody that you can see that, oh, I play like him, I look like him,
mm-hmm.
and they are getting...
They call it your comp. What's your comp?
Yes. If you don't have a comp in the NBA, that means you're a college player.
Exactly.
If you were under 6'1", if you're under 6'3", and you ain't athletic and doing crazy stuff and have the ability to get to the hole whenever you want to and making good decisions mm-hmm. and shoot the ball,
yeah,
it's going to be really tough to you.
Melo's son talked mm-hmm. about it yesterday. Somebody posted and he was just saying, like, you know, I'm not as athletic as other guys and I'm not this, but I am this. I'm smart.
Paul Pierce, see? Mm-hmm. He got that Paul Pierce game to me. Like, he knows his spots. He's going to get to him. He's going to knock his shot. He learned that, though, because if you saw him early on, freshman, sophomore year, it was like, ooh, it's going to be rough for him.
Exactly.
But he found his game. He found where he can thrive with his skill set.
Exactly.
And it normally
comes that junior year.
Yeah, exactly. And so let that develop. But it only develops if you release them to the game and have them, all the stuff you've been talking about, have them around the right people. Let them, send them to California to go and figure it out on their
mm-hmm.
own.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest will work itself out. If they're supposed to be in the NBA, they're going to be in the NBA.
That's okay.
NBA scouts find you.
Exactly.
They will find you. It is literally their job. Now, do they miss sometimes and think, oh, Steph Curry's not going to, you know, I should pick Johnny Flynn over Steph Curry? It happens. But Steph Curry's still in the NBA. He's still the highest paid player in the NBA this year, at least. Is he? He around there, $60 million, wherever he is. He's making a lot of money.
A little bit more than Brian, yeah.
he, right. He's doing what he was supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it's about. And it's because everybody in the league, the professional side, the pro side,
mm-hmm.
is what they have down. They understand that it's a job and they have to go in and do their job.
Yeah, it's all about consistency. And that's really what makes you a pro.
And a good locker room guy. And
exactly.
You look at people, well, he's a bad example at this moment, but I always look at Tristan Thompson, right? I've been in the gym with Tristan Thompson for 5 summers. That man will cook most people one-on-one. Like, he could be on the perimeter. He has handle. He can play, right? But you don't ever see him do that. What do? He goes into games. He plays defense. He rebounds.
Yep,
and he tries to dunk the ball. That's it.
Exactly.
That's it. Nobody cares in warm-up if he misses 13 jump hooks in a row, which he did. Because he don't even shoot them in the game.
Mm-hmm.
That he's just doing his routine. But he's always had a job for the most part
mm-hmm.
because he just played his role and he did it well. And he got paid for playing that role with a superstar in LeBron and Kyrie and whoever, you know?
Yeah.
And so...
So if I can say anything, like, even to that point of... if I, like, for college athletes, I would just, like, tell them to enjoy the moment and get the best out of what they're doing. And, like, play your best you can play. Because if you're an NBA player, it's going to happen for you anyway. I think sometimes they spend so much time worried about that stuff that they don't really get to enjoy the whole spectrum of college basketball or just being in college and playing a sport, because everybody can't do this. And I think that's like, I think about that often, especially now that my son's going through it. My biggest thing is, like, let's not put a timeline on things. Let's just let them happen. Organically, and we'll get what we go get.
Yep. That's it. You see players who are one and done, who
mm-hmm.
go G League route, go overseas.
Mm-hmm.
You got somebody like Jaime Arquez who went to UCLA for 4 years and now he's starting for the Heat.
What? Exactly.
He's starting for the Heat.
Exactly.
And doing his thing. Like, the journey looks different for everyone.
Yeah.
It's about putting the work in, building that system around you, having a blueprint to get to the highest level that you can make it. And
mm-hmm.
then you can transition to other careers. You wanted to be in the NBA.
But
now you're now you're a coach, you're an author, you're a motivator. And when we say coach, you're not just coaching basketball. You're life coaching people and helping families understand how to get their kids to that next level.
Exactly.
In or out of the sport.
Yep.
And so if you had one word to describe this book, one word or short phrase to describe this book, what would it be?
It would be eye-opening. Eye-opening. And I think it will challenge you as a parent of any, like, if you're in that mode of parent, athlete parent, it'll definitely challenge you and make you, like, see things a little bit differently that, you know. So, yeah, I would say eye-opening because I've had people respond to the book, and some of them are like, I never even thought of that. Oh, wow. Some stuff I knew, but I didn't know this, you know. So I think it's just an eye-opening. It was only meant to just, you know, give parents another look at where they're trying to go, but also helping them learn how to get there. That's it. So just eye-opening.
No, that's awesome. I agree. The things that you emphasize in this book. And this book is cool because it's a short book.
Short read.
And it's literally a guide. So if you need to be reminded about something or guided on anything that you deal with in this sports world, you go to this book and you can get it. And so just so you know, we're going to buy 100 copies of these.
Oh, thank you.
And we're going to give them away to people. And so you guys who would like a copy of this book, we will give you instructions on how to get one of those 100 copies
of this book.
Because we support what you're doing and people need this. And so we hope this is a blessing to the people that you wrote this book for and a blessing to you.
Thank you.
As you continue to grow. Anything that you'd like to leave the people with, where else they can find the book for the 100 people that ain't going to get it for free, that where they can purchase the book.
So my website is www.lakitagantz.com. It's my name, LakitaGantz.com. And you'll find, you know, a little bio about me, but that's where you can buy the book. And I'm actually on Instagram as Lakita the Coach Gantz. So you probably find me everywhere with that, but yeah. I guess I'm a coach.
Yeah, it says it on the back of the book. Lakita the Coach Gantz. That's what she is. Thank you so much.
No, I appreciate thank you. So thank you so much.
Being on the first episode, parents just don't understand because they actually do if you buy this book. And so,
exactly.
Now, thank you again. And to all the people watching, please follow her. Reach out to her with questions.
I am a parent consultant. I didn't really say that too much, but I do help other parents.
Yeah.
Help them find, or I actually just counsel. Really, I'm just a counselor. So it's dope. I know this is my work. This is for me.
Awesome. Well, it's for you. It's, well, it's by you, but it's for us. And so we love that. So
thank you
again.
Appreciate it.
And you guys all have a blessed day.
Yeah.